Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody. So excited to have Jim Boykin here from the Internet Marketing Ninjas, founder and CEO. I got to say, I'm so excited to have you here because I remember when I first showed up at PubCon over a decade ago. You know, you look around, I didn't really know anybody there. And I see this company and this guy, and I'm like, what is going on here? Because somebody had figured out not only how to own a conference, but to somehow convince all these really bright, motivated people to leave their homes and move to upstate New York to work tirelessly for this amazing company. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Seth. It is my pleasure to be here.
Tell me, like, you did something, and I guess with COVID, you know, I think we both did something. You inspired me because we turned our keys back into the landlord and went fully virtual. But you built something pretty incredible in upstate New York. Tell me a little bit about it. How did this come to be?
Sure. By accident, really. I never set out to be a CEO and founder of a company. I was a kind of a computer nerd all my life. Got on the internet and was like, oh my God, this is the future. Thought I was going to be a website designer. The original name of our company was We Build Pages.
I remember.
Really became a good designer, but I could get stuff ranked really high. And it just slowly happened. You know, I remember, I think it was in late 2002 when I had to hire the first people, and that was a huge jump. Like, my God, I'm trying to feed myself and now I got to feed other people. And, you know, that was kind of the start of it. And, at the time, you know, it was a really hard decision. Do I take that stage of actually hiring people? And then from there, it, slowly grew over the years. And then at one point, I think about 2013, probably the time you were talking about there with all the all-stars, and we got really big, and kind of my goal at that point was, I want to be a 100-person company, and, you know, I want to be big and filled with all-stars, and kind of I had different dreams then, and kind of when we got all big and we had all the all-stars was kind of where in the, you know, the, you can always have too many cooks and bad communication, and I wasn't on the front line with clients and with the employees, and there's all levels and hierarchies, and I'd tell the assistant someone who would tell the director of something, who would tell the team leaders of something, and, you know, it was like the telephone game. And realized that at one point that, you know, being the biggest company shouldn't really be the goal. Being a profitable company is.
We all have that moment, right?
Where delivering, like, good services.
I have all these clients, and all of a sudden, where'd all my money go?
Yeah,
you had that moment, huh?
So, you know, it was kind of the, you know, business is never, you know, business is never like this. There's ups and downs, and certainly I've been in business for more than 21 years. There's going to be ups and downs, and ideally you get a little smarter each time you come back
up. I hope so.
And, you know, I've now realized, hey, you know, I don't need to be the biggest company in the world. I want to be, we've kind of been the same size for the past, gosh, like 7 or 8 years. We've been between 40 and 45 employees. I kind of found that's a size where I know all the employees' names. I know what everyone's doing. I can manage that. And, you know, we pretty much keeping the size that I like. And I'd rather have a waiting list. So, like, right now we have a waiting list. We're not going to take on more people than we can handle. We had a waiting list for, gosh, probably most of the past 3 years until Corona hit. And then Corona hit, we lost about 18% of our business. The travel sites got decimated. We had a few other clients that, like, their products took huge hits. But we've since have filled that in. So there's a waiting list again. I'm not going to hire more people. You know, I'd rather, you know, our average employee has been with us pretty close to 9 years now. And I like that knowledge base, and I'd rather keep it and have a waiting list than to take on more business and grow. And some of the stuff, it doesn't scale good when you grow. Like, you know, you can keep your quality really good here, but once you start hiring new people and trying to take on more, the quality goes down, which I found. So I like our size. I like the way we run things. I feel like the past like 7 or 8 years, it's been like, I found like everything that works perfect for us. I just want to kind of keep it to that.
That's all. Actually, that it's very interesting and humbling to figure out, because that's where we are size-wise as an agency. And I get it. The thing that scared me was when you have 100 employees, you have 100th worst employee. That's not nothing. And so, you know, both interpersonal and all these different things. I mean, I've seen, you know, I love the culture I've seen of yours from afar. You do amazing things. And I like, you know, we are different. We're a younger company, and it's built on millennials, and we've figured out their code, but you've really done this over an extended period of time, which I think is amazing, whether it be trips, whether it be meals internally. You could probably pivot and start a culture business almost as well as you could an internet business.
I'm kind of, you know, I come from, I think of myself as an old hippie. You know, I was definitely the hippie in high school and in college. And then, you know, for years I traveled around the country and worked in national parks and, you know, took a lot of things and was like, companies are evil, money's evil. And then, you know, a few years later, now I'm running my own business. And it's like, well, you know, now what do I do? And it's like, well, you try and be the best you can. Try and treat the employees the best you can. Try and be different than other companies, you know. It's all the little perks that add up. And the interesting thing about our company is probably 95%, almost, I think, like everyone except for two people at our company all started out at the entry level position. And if you're really good at the entry level position, you're one of the highest paid people in the company, by the way. But like everyone has kind of worked their way, not up, but into the right spot of the company of where they best.
This is like the best conversation ever. That's our model. Our model. The reason I spun Blue Shark out of the law firm as I was doing it, I couldn't keep people as a cost center. So I said, hey, let's share the wealth. And the people we've brought in have become the managers, the ones that are great. They circle into the right role. Sometimes you're like, hey, that's not right. And you bring them over there. But
I'm a big believer in getting the right people on the bus, getting the right people on the team and finding what position they're in. And I've had some crazy, interesting things. I had, like, I remember one lady, she worked as a content marketer for years. And one day we're like, hey, we really need to hire someone for HR. We're getting big enough where, you know,
there's that moment.
We really shouldn't be the HR person. And so we, and this lady walked into my office and she says, you know, I have, you know, 30 years of HR experience. I've taught in school, blah, blah, blah. I'm looking over a resume and I'm like, why were you doing content marketing for us? And she said, well, I've known about your company for years. I wanted to work for you for so bad. I knew you were growing and I knew that one day you would need an HR manager and I would be the one. And today's that day. And I'm like, my God, okay. And she's the best HR person we ever had. But there's been things like that, like crazy experiences like that. But getting the right, you know, for years ago, I used to wait tables. I was a waiter in a restaurant before I started the company. Currently working for me is my old restaurant manager, one of the servers there. She's like the best server in the world and the bartender. And these were like people that when I worked at a lot of jobs, like these are go-getters. These are hustlers. These are people that go above and beyond the call of duty.
That reminds me of Joe from UpCon down in Fort Lauderdale. He built his business with bartenders at one point. I mean, they know how to manage, how to multitask.
Exactly. Excuse me. And that's a lot of the people who we hire were bartenders, servers, you know, I remember, but yeah, a lot, you know, it's knowing the people that can handle multi tables at once and be under that pressure and be able to quickly organize and manage and do stuff fast.
I've been hearing a lot of these sort of talks I've listened to of late. And I know for myself, I was a waiter for 3 summers in New York City. one in the skating rink. The summer, they turned into a well overpriced restaurant, and then America, which was like in the heyday of the late 80s. But like a lot of these life skills, how do you deal with the customers, the manager, the expediter of the kitchen, the chef who's yelling at you, you know, all that
stuff. I am so glad for that experience.
Absolutely.
That customer service experience has served me very well with talking with clients. There was years and years ago, I used to be a Schwann man as well. I don't know if you know the big yellow trucks that sell like ice cream and frozen food, like door to door, where you got to knock
on. The reason I know that is a buddy was a chef and he got himself into that truck. And I remember how big a deal that was, meaning not as a worker, but as his frozen product.
Yeah. But like that, you know, that entry thing of having to like knock on
a door
and like, I've got a book here and a thing.
I get rejected 80% of the time, and knowing you're going to the next door, you're likely to get rejected again, but you know, you're going to get one and make your money.
Yes. And that was a lot of it, knocking on doors and being threatened and whatnot.
Really no different than, you know, look, and as you know, I'm sure you've seen that we're much less far along. When we started, it was much more convincing people. You now have people coming to you. Let me pivot to that. Talk to me. One of the things that I've always admired, and you have some really smart people working for you, was you seem to be able to scale high quality link building in a way that you were way ahead of your time. Talk to me a little bit about that, because that to me was one of those things that you got in early. You knew that was important. You appeared not to go the black hot way of the private blog networks, but instead paid your dues, created relationships, and found ways to replicate that. Talk to me. How did you go about that?
It's really been an evolution. I mean, up until, you know, for years, and honestly, up until November 16th, 2008, which I still remember the day, we were buying links and getting exact match anchor text to money pages and ruling the world with that.
It was pretty cool.
And yeah, it was really cool until Google kind of.
I remember both the good and the bad.
Yeah, they took a bunch of our clients and pushed them down and kind of said in so many terms, "Thou shall not buy links, especially you, Mr. Jim Boykin." And so, you know, at the time, it was 97% of our business. 97% of our business was link buying. And, you know, overnight we had to stop. So, you know, the first step was.
And very profitable too, because that was not expensive to get done.
Oh yeah. And, you know, and we had to reinvent it. And it took a couple of months to figure things out. But I remember where I was when I, you know, it's like, how do you get backlinks and still be within Google's guidelines and still get something of value for the client? And that's the trick.
Look, the good news for you is that everybody could do the old way. You wouldn't have been special, but once they made these new rules, you know, all that stuff is gone. And you really especially for the corporate clients that you've been, you know, so great at getting, those guys they didn't want to be the next JCPenney, right?
Yeah.
They wanted to stay away from that. And so there's all of a sudden a market that you sort of were well positioned with your staff to jump into.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the time when Google hit us, then it really stunk, you know, it's like, there goes all my business. But, I guess necessity is the mother of invention. So you figure out, all right, what's next? And it took a little bit. And, you know, all right, I think the first thing we stumbled upon was broken link building. You know, first we would write to people and be like, hey, what a great page. And I noticed you got a couple of broken links. And here's something that we would suggest. That was all right. You know, and then one day I'm looking at one of the emails we sent saying, hey, you've got a broken link. And I said, I wonder if other people are linking to the broken link. And I found there was like 240 other websites linking to this broken link. And it had something to do with like car parts it had to do with Henry Ford. And I'm thinking like, oh, we have a car site, you know, someone that does something with cars. Like if we put the Henry Ford page, you know, if we rewrite the page of what used to be there, that's now a dead page. You know, we go back into the Wayback Machine, see what used to be there, rewrite it better, throw it on the client site, and then send an email to all 240 people saying, I see you have a broken link that has the anchor text of this, and I found a better page. If you want to fix it, I found this page over here on client site. You know, that was kind of the first thing that started to get us out. But we don't really do too much of that anymore. A tiny, tiny piece of that broken link building. But, you know, then it's, it was hard. We had to figure out what is the type of content you can write to get links how do you get links without having to purchase them or get into, you know, you had mentioned things like private blog networks. You know, I think one of the biggest thing is I pride myself on being the link guy. You know, often I say like content marketing because link building is a dirty word now. But you know, a lot of what we do as well is analyzing backlinks. And a lot of my knowledge comes from our own tools where we're grabbing data from Moz, Majestic, Ahrefs, and we're combining that and looking at the link data. But beyond that, we've mapped it. We've mapped a lot of the link data. I'll just jump into this for a second. And I hope I don't upset anyone in the listening audience or anything, but anyone that sells links, we've taken a piece of their database and put it into our tool. So all the major sellers and anyone that goes to conferences or if you search for link building or whatever, like any one of those places, I've got a little piece of their database. And from that little piece of their database, we've mapped out their whole database, as well as I have a list of the top 1,000 buyers for every suspected, for every seller. So like we've mapped out their networks plus all the sellers and where all the power comes from for every link buy-in network. So anytime that someone comes to us, the first thing I can do is pop their site into our link analysis tool and tell them if they've been buying links and from where and which ones they are. And because of that knowledge, because of my knowledge of how we can map the links, when you talk about things like private blog networks or, you know, the lawyer sites, let's talk about lawyer sites for a minute. I know a little bit about, just a little bit about lawyer sites. But I know that there's a lot of lawyer sites that all have their own network of sites. You know, they've got the site about this case, the site about this case, the site about the, you know, they have all these satellite sites. Now there can be some good with that. You know, and we can certainly go into the debate, is it better to have all the satellite sites or the one real site? There's pros and cons to both. And sometimes there are the advantages to having those. But when you talk about the links between those, a lot of that can be mapped. And that's not to say that any of this is going to get you penalized. I know a lot of lawyers have their own separate satellite sites, and there's reasons for that. But the links between those might not have the full value of stuff from outside of that network.
Well, and look, those people like myself, I built a firm with multiple sites. I intentionally no index, no follow in between. I'm just like, I don't want to wake up and be gone. We if you do stuff right, the stuff, if you're able to map it and you're a smart guy, Google's got resources well beyond Jim.
Yeah.
They know what's going on. They can tie this stuff together.
And there's one thing to have your own sites that are lawyer related and networked, but it's another thing to have a whole bunch of paid blog links from known paid blog link sellers.
Well, and that's, well, let, that, let be me, careful that's of. The headline right today, right? So we keep going. We went years ago when we had our favorite spam fighter at Google, you know, there was don't do guest blogs, but he said, you know what? Guest blogs are okay. Just don't be paying for crap, right? Don't do the crap stuff that was an iteration of the link farms from before, you know, don't do that. But if you have a real guest blog, great. Well, look, yeah. If I'm getting this, I shudder to think what you're getting. I'm getting between LinkedIn and email, 20 emails a day of people wanting to sell me these domain, you know, these DRs and this links.
And all those spreadsheets go into our tool. Right. Like every day we're adding stuff to the
tool. Right, everything that comes in. And then you could say, you know what? Well, you're the guy reselling it. I know the guy, you know, if you've been doing this long enough, you know the guy, if I really wanted this link, I'm not paying you 80, it's 40 from this guy because he owns the site instead of you trying to make the markup. So great. But if I feel like we're at another tipping point with that. Now, maybe Google doesn't care. We're seeing in local, they certainly don't care about spam. Maybe they've given up. But the idea that it's so public what is going on right now with paid links, if you're able to do this, and most people aren't, as you know, putting a chart together like this, there's no secret that this is a site for sale. Does that, like, where are we on that continuum? Do we have time, you think?
Well, here's the interesting thing. So I have another tool so for each of the big paid link sellers, I have another tool that says, here's the top 1,000 suspected buyers within each network. The top 1,000 buyers, we have another tool that runs their search engine value price from SEMrush on a monthly basis. And anything that falls by less than 30% in a month is kind of put up into a chunk. So what happens is we can see when chunks of these networks get mapped, and then either sites are penalized or the value goes away by looking at suddenly there's a huge drop across these networks. Now, it's interesting because I can map this and I can follow this. And maybe it's because when anyone writes to me, I take those sites, you know, like whenever they write to me and they're like, hey, we've got a whole bunch of sites, I'm always like, great. I've got some finance sites. I got some education sites. Yeah, you know, send me over a big spreadsheet so I can look through it. And, you know, whatever they send me, I feed into our tool, which maps out everything.
Maybe that's your next paid service. Oh,
but if I can get it, I kind of assume that you're right. Like, I would assume that Google picks it up. And as soon as I pop in a site, like, I instantly can tell, oh, wow, you're buying links from Bob's network. Like, I would think that Google, you know, and you can kind of spot how Google sometimes will catch things and you see sites drop within a network. But it's not as much as I would suspect. How much time? You know, I worry about anyone that's in any of those networks because, you know, either one of two things happen. Either suddenly the links don't pass value, which I think is fairly common.
And that seems to be the new thing. We're not seeing a lot of manual things the way we did.
Exactly. Just suddenly, you know, they go down, but nothing's happened. But it's like all these stuff that did have value, you know, you were buying from Bob's network and Bob's network just got hit. You didn't get a manual penalty, but yeah, everything, you know, starts going down. Because that stuff that did have power once now no longer has it. So I guess, you know, it's, you know,
it's like everything in moderation. But if you get 100 emails, do you find any of them bringing you something that's not unique, because obviously they're selling it to the world, but are there values out there that are not interlinked, that are not going to bring you down? You know, are there opportunities out of the people who are now, you know, everywhere trying to push these things?
I'm not sure if I understood the question.
Meaning, do you still find in this research that you're doing, obviously, yep, you don't want something tied together, and you don't want something where there's major buyers, but you know, do you find that there is value if you do your research and you find the one diamond in the rough of what you're being offered, that there's something that hasn't, or do they eventually get bastardized? Is there any value to be found in that whole world?
I mean, in the link buyer world, no. Any site that's in someone's spreadsheet, they're selling to you and they're selling to hundreds or thousands of other people. Any site that sells links is doing it to thousands of other people.
What about the legitimate places? A lot of them went no index, no follow, but a lot of people made a lot of money with like the Forbes and things like that. You know, what about the quasi, the places with a brand, but it was still for sale for a large number?
You know, I mean, links are the most powerful piece. You know,
right.
Talk about content and usability and the technical aspects. But I mean, you know, in one sense, any link that you can get is going to be valuable, certainly some more than others. You know, I guess the takeaway is don't get links that comes from people's spreadsheets where those sites are selling them to lots of other people. But if there's something certainly where you're like, hey, here's a lawyer resource site, and there's a couple things you got to keep in mind. Like, Google's trying to filter out things that appear to be like anything, like any page that has the word guest on it could be filtered by Google. Any page with the word sponsor on it could be filtered by Google. And by filtered, I'm not saying penalized.
No, you're saying like they're like, hey, we get it. This is not for you.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're like, hey, here's some great lawyer site and I want to put something on there, you know, I'm going to send an email to him and he's going to do something and he's not doing it for everyone. And it doesn't look like, you know, how do I say, you know, whatever happens in private email, who knows what Google is going to know if you're not in network or whatever.
Unless you're on Gmail, which they're reading it anyway.
Yeah. That's why I use Yahoo, you'll notice. That's my email.
Let me ask you a bunch of stuff that I asked you as a 10 years ago, and I mean 5 years ago when I've seen you over time, no follow sites, no index, no follow sites. Are you still, you're still fighting for the Wikipedias and for the Forbes, even though they're not following? Is it still there? What's your feeling on that?
Well, Forbes I know hasn't passed page rank in 10 years.
I'm just using that as an example of these. The things that never, Wikipedia, things like that. Do you still want the links without the follow?
98% of the time, I would say a no followed link, in my guess, has zero value. Now Google has said, hey, we may follow some of the no follows. So of course they may follow the Wikipedia, although I think Danny Sullivan said that's what everyone thought, but we actually didn't, which was interesting because that was the first thing I figured. But Wikipedia has other side benefits, more like the knowledge panel and things like that you can get with the Wikipedia. But I guess normally, no, if I found some, if I'm a lawyer and I found some great lawyer site and they had some advertising and they said all the advertising has a no follow on it, then my thought was, okay, there's zero SEO value. If I think it's worth it to get the clicks or branding, sure.
We're talking SEO geek wise, link wise.
Yeah, then no follow links to me, no value. There certainly can be exceptions. When Google said that we might start following the no follow, they kind of said, they gave some hints about what sites they might. And the sites that they said they might were like super highly trusted sites where every link on the site is no followed because they're overly paranoid.
Right.
So it's not like someone's like, hey, this no follow off of this, little blogger guy is suddenly going to count. No, I don't think so.
But you're not finding that there are, what you're talking about makes sense, right? If they were doing it manually, you'd be like, hey, these are trusted places. For 10 years, they haven't been passing it. Does that show some form of authority? Because it's almost like people are not chasing it. Along those lines, what's your take on the scholarship or charity games these days?
It's one of the filters that we put in. So scholarship links, here's kind of the problem with scholarship links. Every conference that I've been to the past 10 years, there's always a link builder panel where someone on the link builder panel says scholarship links and everyone writes it down and everyone starts them up. And the past couple of years, I was doing a couple slides about scholarship links and I would show off payday loan scholarship pages, casino scholarship pages. So I'd pull all these up and be like, look guys, it's kind of, because it's been talked about so much and everyone and their mother has done it and the payday loan sites have done it and gambling sites have done it. And once they've done it, they've ruined it for everyone. Forever. Like to me, it's one of those things where, again, I don't think Google would ever hurt you for doing any scholarship link building, but it wouldn't surprise me if any page that has the word scholarship on it also doesn't pass PageRank. It is one of the checks that we do with our tool. I can see if any of your pages have scholarship on them and see if someone's doing scholarship link building. I don't think it would ever, ever hurt you. But then again, if I were Google, and I know they've been in a lot of those sessions, and I'm sure there's someone, a Google rep, in one of those sessions when they hear scholarship link building that writes down, don't pass PageRank on pages with scholarship on them. All the SEOs are doing it now.
Well, I got a question.
I don't know.
That I had Mike Blumenthal on the show and we were talking local, and local is so filled with spam. It's like we're back when you could buy your overseas links and be successful. Exact match domain spam is winning the day. Now it's not long term, it gets knocked out, but it's infuriating how much it is embedded. You're talking about this like Google's coming and taking notes on the organic side. Why do you think there's such a dichotomy between the spam fighting on organic, which seems particularly sharp and moving in the right direction, where I like each algorithm update because it gets rid of the riffraff and my good quality stuff rises. Mm-hmm. I love it. Like every time there's a core help, other than that one crazy one where it's, all my
sometimes good stuff. Sometimes they break things.
But other than that one time, it was 24 hours, it went back, we were fine. What's your take? Why is Google doing such a bad job of spam fighting local?
I think they're still trying to figure it out. We don't do a lot of local internet marketing, thank goodness.
And thank God, because it's my space, and I'm glad not to have Jim floating around it.
Yeah, but I think it's hard to every month if you follow local rankings, especially in the local packs, like month to month to month, you're in, you're out, you're up, you're down. It's just, it changes so much that if we were like, hey, I'm a local internet marketing company, I'd be bald and gray and
hence I'm losing the hair.
It'd be a lot harder. Why I think Google is still trying to figure it out. And Corona probably didn't help any, because now businesses are open, close, our address changed. Like, I'm sure that just...
Well, that's the other crazy part. You know, yeah. Virtual offices are illegal. Now we're all virtual. So,
yeah.
So talk to me, if you were sort of, what I love is sort of cutting through the BS. Give me, again, without giving away the state secrets, two or three things that you think are working that if somebody's sort of starting out, they should be focused on. And then I'm going to follow up just so there's no surprise. On the other side, what are the two or three things people are chasing that probably aren't paying ROI from a link building perspective?
Should I keep it all the link building or SEO in general?
Well, I'll let you answer it the way you wish.
Well, I mean, in general, you know, I guess there's four main areas that everyone should be focusing on. You know, there's, to me, the order would be link building first, which means creating something that's going to obtain.
Understood. And what I'm pushing you on is tell me what you think generally is like, you know, we know what's not working, you know, and there are things that work, but the ROI of sending out a gazillion emails on broken links, you know, the gig is up. It's sort of like it was cool when it first started, yeah. But you get too many of them and they're going to Viagra sites and you're not really wanting to read them right there.
I think what people have to think about is what can earn links in their industry. So many people think that it's like, you work with lots of lawyers, right, Seth?
Yeah.
So let me give like a, you know, someone's like, hey, personal injury New Jersey page, you know, I want to get backlinks to it. And it's like, well, why would anyone link to that specific page?
We ask that question a lot.
Yeah. Now, certainly you do want to create the world's best personal injury New Jersey page. You want to have, you know, original research would be great. You know, certainly create the world's best page. But when we think about what can be built to attract links to the site, it's not that. You have to create other stuff. You have to think outside of, you know, you're this site, but in order to build backlinks, you need to create this linkable content. You know, if you're something on, you know, a law site or a personal injury, there's different types of stuff that you could create.
But basically have great high quality content that somebody wants to link to. That's SEO. So when you were saying before, it's like, if you look at link building in a vacuum, you have shit content, you're trying to get somebody to link to it, it's not going to work.
Yeah. And it's not just the quality of that content. I think you have to think outside the box. You know, if you're a lawyer site, you need to start creating other resources that are linkable. You know, maybe it's, 100 resources for lawyers. Maybe it's, Abraham Lincoln's Law Days. Maybe it's study about famous Supreme Court cases.
Well, like, what you're saying is like the stuff that's going to convert after an accident may or not be sexy, but you could actually get law schools linking to you if you're giving them useful information. And if how do you meld that? That's the job of the SEO. How do you meld it together to have stuff that's interesting enough? Yes, you can get it to the site. Can you get it on the page? That's the hustle.
Yeah. And then within that content, you know, you're going to be linking to your money pages as well. But like, how do you get super highly trusted links or how do you go viral? You know, I mean, there's another way to get links. You know, I talk about writing trusted content. You know, if you write that trusted content, say you write something about like Abraham Lincoln and his law days, you know, you can write to EDUs, orgs, teachers, schools. Those are certainly great links to have to your site. And who cares if the Abraham Lincoln page ranks high? But if that page has some internal links to your money pages, A, it's making your site more trusted by getting those links, plus it's pushing power to the pages you are targeting. Now, if we talk about another way of link building, maybe it's something that you want to go viral. You want to create something that's going to spread across the internet. You know, your personal injury lawyer New Jersey page is not going to go viral on Reddit. You know, no. Something maybe, you know, 101 lawyer jokes is going to go viral on Reddit. Or maybe it's some kind of study about which state has the most lawyers or something, you know, and you can be like an original study, conducted by whatever company, you know, and you can grab all the data. It doesn't have to be like a super study, so to speak. But, you know, you grab some data sets, you write it, you put it out, it goes viral, you get all these links in. But it's like, link building is different, I think, than what a lot of people think. They think it's like, here's my money pages and I need to create the world's best page and get links to my money page. And it's like, well, no, in order to get great links, you got to think a little bit outside the box and think about what is linkable content that you can write. You don't have to feature it on your site. You don't got to feature it on your blog. You don't got to.
No, but if it's a page in and get
your, it's get food the for Google. Links. You need something for that food. So people will link to your site.
Well, let me ask you, this is along these lines. Something I've sort of struggled with going back to, we'll go back to the days of the spammy anchor text, you know, where it was sort of, at first it was like no more than 5%, now 1% once per paragraph, maybe. What's your feeling? Because I feel for myself, I've gotten so white hat, for lack of a better word, we're not focused on it. And I feel that we've possibly, as new players have come in, they're not as sensitive, hadn't lived through those penalties, and that they're a bit more aggressive with anchor text, and that can sting or be disadvantaged. What's your take on how the use of anchor text?
I don't think I've ever told anyone ever how to link to any of our clients in 10 years. You know, it's kind of, if someone's doing something where I know that they're going to link or something, either I don't tell them how to link, which is 99% of the case, or if they ask, I'll just be like, whatever seems to make sense to you.
But you talked about the power of links. It still appears that the power of anchor text carry, and I follow your
philosophy. Oh, it does.
This has been a great conversation. I feel like I've unwittingly followed much of your playbook. And I do exactly what you're talking about. It's very, very rare. Somebody says what it is, whatever makes sense, get it. But I have guys that we're competing against that aren't playing that game and have a significant percent. And when you look at the distribution of anchor text, it's there. And for certain terms, it works.
Yeah. See, I guess, and you're right. It totally 100% works. I think what happened is, you know, in November of 2008, when Google came after me, I got scarred so hard.
That's my point.
Life, that like, I'm always paranoid that Google is looking at me and what I'm doing.
You have more of a target, you believe, because you're you.
I don't think I am anymore. Like, Matt Cutts has moved on and life has moved on and I'm not buying links anymore. So like, you know, but when I look at anchor text, you know, and even with our tools, you can easily sort things by anchor text, and a human can easily tell if all of your anchor text is personal injury lawyer, New Jersey.
Of course. No. And that's what I want to talk about. And obviously that's gone. But the idea that you are, whether it's dirty anchor text, stuff that I haven't talked to anybody about in 10 years, I've just sort of done, taking this, like, hey, whatever comes in. And now I'm seeing, hey, we're ranking for criminal, but not for DUI as powerfully, at least locally, let's say, for something. Yeah. And I'm like, and I look at, see these guys doing it. And again, they're doing it at a level I wouldn't do it. But is there a point where you say, you know what, let's make sure that there's a DUI somewhere in that inbound text so that we're not just the schmucks out there with nothing?
Yeah, I tend to, in any working of anchor text, I tend to focus more internally links. So a lot of what we do as well is, how do you get the power from some of your pages that have backlinks to go to the pages that you really want to rank, that you're trying to rank?
And right.
That is going to take place through internal links and variations of anchor text. Plus, we have other programs where, you know, if you have a page which is, I'll stick with a personal injury New Jersey page. Let's say you've got a whole personal injury law site that covers every single state, and one of them is the New Jersey page. I lost my train.
Basically, the question of specific anchor text for an internal page.
Oh, yeah. So let's say that the New Jersey page, you know, let's say you're number 13 for New Jersey personal injury lawyer. You're number 12 for a New Jersey personal injury attorney. And other variations. Well, we'll kind of create a spreadsheet of, here's your important pages, here's all the variations of anchor text that are important. And then internally throughout the site, sometimes it's linking with this phrase, sometimes
Right, well, you're mixing it up to get all the different variations, and you're not
doing it so spammy, they're always the same.
Obviously, the days of New Jersey personal injury lawyer as the one piece and the money term, first, there's no money term search that much anymore, and secondly, you want the diversity to seem somewhat natural.
Yeah, I want it to look completely natural. So if a Google guy was looking over my work, he would be like, all right, everything looks natural, including anchor text. Like, you're certainly not going after right. money phrase.
Right, and we talk, you know, I talk about in the law, it's does it pass the laugh test? You're in front of a judge, you could say it without laughing. If they said, hey, Mr. Jim, like you look at all these things and you start cracking up, like, yeah, you can't make that argument. But if it's really diverse and it just happens to be that you have one of each of the different versions you want floating through 2-3 times, not going to kill you on a mega site.
Yep.
What do you see people doing that you sort of laugh at? You go to these conferences and you see the people presenting from stage. Everyone's stage time, so they come. What are the 2 or 3 things that you think people are chasing their tail that's just complete nonsense?
I hate to say it, but it's a lot of the other link building companies that say, like, we have big spreadsheets. And you're like, all right, I've got a law website. And they're like, oh, great. You know, we've got 10,000 bloggers on our list and 100 of them are law bloggers. And we're going to write a page about your New Jersey criminal, or was it New Jersey personal injury. And we're going to write a page on this, you know, law blogger site. And it's going to link to you with the money phrases to your And it sounds good. You know, the page gets published, they show it to their boss, and the boss is like, oh, great, it's a lawyer blogger. They wrote all about us. They got the money link. And the boss is like, great job. Keep up that work. But what they don't know is that site is in a spreadsheet that can be mapped, and they're selling to every other lawyer, and they're selling to every other kind of sites. And I think that's the part that drives me nuts, is so many people think, I'll get on that blog, and they don't realize that blog is selling to everybody.
It's a bad neighborhood. Like, we talked about that for years, right? It's a bad neighborhood. And, you know,
that's what drives me nuts at the show, is that, you know, a lot of people, they come up, you know, would come up to us and be like, you're different than these other people. Everyone else says, you know, they have hundreds of bloggers that they have access to. And it's like, I don't even write to bloggers. I don't trust bloggers.
It's so funny. I'm thinking about whether you could use this analogy in 7 different dubious industries where you think you're the only one, and yet everybody's going to that well. It could be used in a bunch of blue areas, a bunch of non-blue areas.
And you see, here's the thing. One of those lawyer sites is going to get busted by Google. Guarantee it. I know they have. A lot of lawyer sites have been busted. And when the Google guy maps it out, the guy who's obviously been busted, and they map out his links, and they say, oh, here's a bunch of other lawyers doing the same thing. Boom, 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 boom. That's what happens.
But is it, if you go back to those early days, is it, you know, look, you take a very extreme view as I do and want to keep it super clean, but is it one of those things, if you don't get greedy, you know, if your sole business model is buying blogger links, that's going to be a problem. If you happen to get a blog placed here and here and here, you know, like anything else, that's not going to bring down your site. The worst that can happen is they're not going to.
No, I love blog links that come naturally. Like, if we do something and it goes viral and the news picks it up and bloggers write about it, great.
But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the in-between, the gray stuff, where there is, the bloggers need to make their money. And the question is it a blogger who doesn't normally, like, it's almost like you're back to dating days. Is somebody like seeing everybody, or are they just going to see you?
Here's the thing. If you're like, hey, law blogger Bob has offered to put my link on a site. There's a couple things you can run to check. One of the things that I would check would be, I would go to SEMrush and look at the domain's value. I'd look at the organic chart.
Well, of course, that's the first thing you're going to do.
Zero value, then like run. The site's been penalized. So you want to look at the chart, like the chart over time. You know, if the site's always been low value and only has a few backlinks, no problem. But if the site used to rank for thousands of phrases and boom, flat line, like, stay away from that. The other thing that you can do if you're thinking of buying the links on it, well, there's a couple of quick checks. You can either spider the whole site and look at the external links and see
who easy
you have to. There's a couple of quick checks you can do. You can do like site:bobslawyersite.com/paydayloans.
Right.
Space casino, space Viagra. Like, are they selling links to everyone in the world? Like, you know,
right. And so, like, if you find out, no, they're not, it's just to lawyers, a little bit safer than if
it certainly can be. You know, if it looks like, you know, there's stuff that whenever I find a pattern, and it's probably the same for Google, you have to kind of decide, all right, something fits a pattern. Does that mean it's good or bad? Because not everything that fits a pattern is bad. There's certainly a lot of things that can fit a pattern that's good. If I go in and I see a pattern, it's like, all right, there's a bunch of law sites that, you know, are linking to this directory, or this directory for whatever is linking these law sites because it makes sense, then, you know, it may fit a pattern, but that's okay. It's when something appears to fit a pattern, or Google's like, you're obviously in some network, or you're trying to manipulate something. But if it's a pattern that's a real pattern for real reasons, no problem.
And that's one of the things I found fascinating about local search for us. And I don't know how many of you even speak to it, but, you know, Google said they want the best answer for this query. And they really made a thing that they wanted an end user. And look, over the years, the top of organic, now, if you're playing the game right, you can pop it, but there's going to be somewhere between 1 and 6. Four of those slots are taken by national directories that are not necessarily a great user experience. Now, I always thought maybe they were worried about antitrust issues, and they were trying to give other people a bite at the apple. And if they gave people some love and traffic, they wouldn't get sued. It never made any sense to me. They know what a user wants when they're going there, and yet they're giving people all these other things. And we have to, you know, now not only are you trying to get to the top, but you now have to fight some national players to get there.
I think a lot of it is that branding stuff too. Those national players may have that, the brand factor. I mean, we all know.
What's it, national players, national directories I'm talking about, not just a powerful law firm, but people that are not an answer, but
I'm thinking what there's like, is it Nolo or what?
There's Nolo, there's Justia, there's Fine Law, there's Super Lawyers, there's all this stuff.
Yeah. And so, because of that brand and because of the brand searches, they kind of do have that advantage. And that's an interesting thing, because something that every SEO should think about as well is turning your company into a brand. How do you increase your brand searches? You know, brands win every time there's a update.
Well, they do win, but then you lose your anchor text. So, they do win, but we have a client with an exact match anchor text as a branded firm name. And I got to tell you, it's freaking brilliant. they are crushing people that are spending 7x what they're spending for years. And that, you know, so yes, brand wins, but anchor text dominates.
Oh yeah, especially if, you know, your brand is, you know, New Jersey criminal defense.
Exactly. If you're in a state that allows you to do
lawyer.com.
Yeah. Exactly. That's pretty freaking powerful.
Oh, definitely. Especially because everyone's going to be linking into it with that name. And like you alluded to earlier, yeah, anchor text is definitely a huge signal for Google. And yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah, of course, I like good anchor text going in. What am I going to say? I'm public here, you know, keep it 100% natural. But yeah, I know.
But I guess the question is the balance. I mean, I assume you are calculated enough. You know, do you internally have a number you're willing to go to? Do you have a sort of a metric saying, hey, don't do this, or you're doing so little of it that when you add it back in, you're not worried because you're so far below the industry?
Not sure.
I don't think I've ever not gotten an answer to a question I've asked you directly. I feel like that is as good a time to say we have, you know, I'd love to have you back on, but this has been awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Seth.
Really appreciate you. I think the stewardship you've had in the industry has been has just been fantastic. And watching, you know, getting to know a lot of your team guys, I never really did. You built such a pyramid, and the talent beneath you is so immense that it's been great. Just over the years, getting to know some of these guys has been awesome.
Thank you, Seth. It's been a pleasure to talk with you tonight. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.